Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, my name is John Manuel. Thank you so much for the download. Here at BaseballAmerica.com, we'll have a couple questions sent in to us at the podcast at BaseballAmerica.com address. If you'd like to sponsor that inbox, feel free to give us a holler at podcast at BaseballAmerica.com. But also, we are going to talk National League Central top prospects next week, or maybe even later this week, will be some National League West top prospects.
Which will be our wrap-up.
And we're getting into the top 100, and we're also obviously starting our college preview blowout at BaseballAmerica.com this week. And toward the end of today's podcast, we'll reveal our Super Bowl picks for the big game coming up this weekend with our expert, J.J. Cooper. And if you want to hear some, if you really want to talk Super Bowl, I would encourage you to check out, just Google J.J. Cooper plus Steelers, and you'll get some offensive line and defensive line breakdowns. JJ loves line play, and that'll all be broken down online. But we won't plug it too much. That's enough of a plug for that. National League Central, though, JJ. One thing to me stands out about the National League Central's prospects: they're not that good. It's not the strongest division. All six of these organizations have some warts on them. Now you do the Reds, so we'll probably talk a little bit more about the Reds today than any other organization. But it's not a strong
when you say that
group.
One thing that jumps out to me, and this is just completely off the top of my head, but if you looked at each of these teams and you compared it to last year's top 10, I don't know. I guess maybe the Pirates, because Pedro Alvarez is
you know,
at number one, and they did bring in a lot of guys in trades. The Pirates probably have a better top 10 now than they did last year.
Pirates and Cardinals are probably the ones that are the most improved. And I think the Cardinals have made a decent leap forward, and they're kind of a controversial organization, so we can talk a little bit about them when we get to them, about their ranking and their farm system, how good or how not good it is. Really depends on your point of view. But I do think it's – I think you're right. I think in general the Cubs, the Brewers graduated some guys, and they traded away guys to make the CC Sabathia trade. I mean, the Reds graduated some guys.
Their top four guys from last year don't qualify for this year's list.
Yeah, they had some great rookie year from guys like Johnny Cueto, a good rookie year from Joey Votto, decent rookie year from Johnny Cueto, decent rookie year from Jay Bruce, Homer Bailey no longer qualifying.
And not a decent rookie year.
Not a good rookie year in any way, shape, or form. But like you said, and I think the other...
And the Astros, I mean, they got Jason Castro at the top, which, you know...
And actually the Astros are trending up, but that's because they had nowhere to go but up.
that's basically, because they were... at the bottom with a bullet last year, and they're at the bottom this year.
I mean, last year's number one, I think it was a good choice. His number one was J.R. Tolles, and he had about as bad a rookie season as you can have. What did he hit, 118?
It was awful. And the reality of it is that when you look back on it, it's not like you go, well, they should have had, this guy should have been, number one, because the reality is that they didn't have a number one prospect.
Yeah, no, they didn't, and they barely do this year. Now, what do you think, JJ, what to you is the top farm system, or top 10 anyway? We'll put it that way. What's the best top 10 in this division?
Pre-show,
we narrowed it down to St. Louis and Milwaukee. So which beer do you like better?
I like the Brewers. I think that, Escobar is number one. Alcides Escobar, it's as good a defensive shortstop prospect as out there, especially the combination of, he's a glove first shortstop who can hit or has hit at times. Now, I think there is some debate. I know he had a very good year in Huntsville last year. I would not, be surprised at all if they hand him, if he ends up being handed the shortstop job at some point this year, that, he might struggle with the bat some of the big leagues.
Right. But, I don't think he's a great fantasy shortstop.
Right. But he is, a very solid shortstop prospect. And the thing that just jumps out to me is that, Matt Gamble's number two. He's one of the better hitting prospects in the minor leagues.
No doubt.
Now that Prince Fielder has signed a new deal, I don't know where necessarily he fits at the big league level. But
Triple A Nashville for the short term, I think. But the big leagues, where
does
he go? I don't know.
Is he a third? Not a whole lot of people think, hey, the great third baseman. This guy's going to be able to stick there.
Right.
But Brett Lowry three. But as much as that, what jumps out also is that you've got guys like Taylor Green, 8, Cole Gillespie, 9, Jonathan LeCroy, 10. Those are guys who I kind of like.
Those are really solid guys. I think the Brewers top 10 has a lot of potential for big league regulars like Escobar, Gamble, Lowry. I think Lowry's a potential star. Guys who
Jeremy
have
Jeffers
a chance to be big league regulars like Dykstra and Kane, Green. I don't know what to think of Angel Salomon. He's a completely off the board guy. I just don't know what to think of a 5'7" catcher who's had a performance enhancing drug suspension in his career. I just don't know what to make of him. The concern for me with the Brewers is the lack of pitching in their farm system. Only one pitcher in the top 10 in Jeremy Jeffress. It's not been something they, you know, you look back through their history, you know, they have developed two guys now in their big league rotation in Gallardo and Manny Parra. But, you know, Mark Rogers, kind of his career's withered away as they took away his tubing and wouldn't let him long toss. I'm pointing the finger at the Brewers 100% on that. But I also say that, to me, that's why I think I like St. Louis's farm system maybe a little bit better, because I do think the Cardinals have a little bit more balance, and I do like their hitters. You know, Alcides Escobar versus Colby Rasmus, I'll take Colby Rasmus, even though I like Escobar. I did the Brewers system a couple years ago, maybe it was 3 or 4 years ago, and actually I think it was after the 2004 season, and we had Escobar pretty high then, and I remember it was controversial that we had Escobar ranked over Hernan Aribaran.
That's worked out
now,
pretty well.
Now residing in the where are they now? Where is he corking his bat now file? You know, then Brett Wallace and Matt Gamble are a good comp.
They really are.
I think Matt Gamble has shown more with the bat, certainly, but Brett Wallace in his first pro season did get the AA.
Brett Wallace has as good a first pro season as anyone from last year's draft.
I think he probably had the best debut of anyone from last year's draft when you factor everything in. Do I think he'll play third base long-term in the major leagues? No, but guess what? He might even have a shot in 2009 with Troy Glaus's injury issues. And if Glaus doesn't do it, you have David Freese, who's your number nine prospect, who doesn't have a huge ceiling, but I think David Freese can be like a really dependable 300, 400 at bat guy, first base, third base, emergency catcher, left field kind of guy.
The thing with Wallace is that you can get so caught up on, well, can he play third long term?
And the profile,
and all that.
Yeah.
And the reality of it is that if you focus on what he can do, the guy can hit.
Correct.
And he can hit probably well enough, you know, that, yes, okay, with St. Louis, he's not going to be a first baseman.
Right.
We know that. But he hits well enough that you got to figure, you know, if you focus on, that's the biggest tool that, you know, that's the most valuable tool you can have.
Absolutely.
If you can hit, they'll find a way to have you play.
I think when we're factoring in, you know, the Cardinals have to decide, can this guy help our major league team on the field? And he probably can't do that at first base because of Albert Pujols is the best player in the game, and that's their first baseman. So he has to play third base or maybe left field. When we're looking at Brett Wallace, that's not really as big of a factor for us. We're just assessing him as a player, regardless of what his situation is with the Cardinals. So then you have a couple guys in Chris Perez and Jason Mott who've already contributed in the major leagues. Yes, they're relievers, but they've already shown the ability to be pretty good relievers. Granted, it's small sample size, but those two guys have big-time stuff.
Right, and in Mott's case, well, you know, you look at what he did in – I know he had a 0.82 ERA in the big leagues. That's
right.
Really good. I'm more impressed what he did in AAA.
Absolutely.
110 strikeouts in 67 innings.
Oh, absolutely, and only 26 walks. This is a guy, you first read about him in Baseball America back in the summer of 2002. He was the number 10 prospect in the New England Collegiate League as a catcher. He was rated there for one reason only, because of his defense. USA Baseball's Steve Cohen told me about him, and the USA college team played the NECBL. They made a tour up there. He said that Jason Mott was the best defensive catcher he'd seen in college baseball in years, and that's why Jason Mott got a chance to catch as a pro, because it wasn't because of his bat.
And he was a
historically bad hitter.
He was on, do the Florida State League for us as far as best tools and all.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There were a couple years there when it was very easy to pick best defensive catcher.
Almost unanimous, probably.
It was just basically, okay, Jason Mott. And next year, Jason Mott again.
But he could never get the whole hang of that hitting deal, and now he's a pitcher, and he's already gotten in the big league. So it's a great story there. But I think the Cardinals are a little bit better. They have more guys close to the majors. They have a couple of, to me, like the middle tier, the 5, 6, 7 guys on our pages laid out, JJ, that's the difference between, for me, with St. Louis and Milwaukee. 5, 6, 7. It's really weird how these systems kind of parallel each other. Angel Salome, 5 for Milwaukee, catcher. Brian Anderson, 5, catcher for the Cardinals. Anderson's certainly the more conventional prospect. Mm-hmm. I think I give him a slight edge over Salome. Clayton Mortensen versus Lorenzo Cain. I'm a big Clayton Mortensen guy. I've always thought he's going to be a nice prospect. The guy, the AAA in basically his first full season. That's not easy to do. Those numbers are not good, but Yeah, he's a college senior. I understand that too. But you're taking a guy who's 1 year out of Gonzaga and sticking him in the Pacific Coast League. He survived, and his strikeout numbers are pretty good. The walk rate not so good. I still like Clayton Mortensen, and then Darryl Jones is a real high upside guy, and I think I would take him over any of the outfielders that the Brewers have: Kane, Dykstra, Gillespie. I think I'd rather have Darryl Jones than those guys. So to me, the Cardinals farm system in the top 10 at least, a little bit better than Milwaukee's. And I really do give Milwaukee a knock against it because there's a historic lack of ability to develop pitchers. They've got them up with three this decade, and that's pretty good. Ben Sheets, Yogi Gallardo, and then and Manny Parra. But that's been a historical blind spot for that organization. And I don't see that ending when Jeremy Jeffress is their only real guy they're kind of banking on.
And then after that, so those are the top two, and I think we both agree those are the top two.
Yeah, I think there's a decent drop-off after that to number three.
The Reds, I think we both agree, are number three, because let's make it clear, and I think the Reds are kind of in a little strata. I think we both agree that the Pirates, there are other people in the office who believe that the Pirates may compare or be above the Reds.
Yeah.
I think we both agree that the Reds are a little bit above the Pirates.
I think so, too. And I do think so. I think the biggest reason that people in the office, for the differing opinion, it really depends on how much you believe in Pedro Alvarez. I think that's really what it comes down to. Now, how much stock do you put in Pedro Alvarez, and how much does he make? Because he's the difference maker. And for me, yeah, Pedro Alvarez, I think, will be a star. But I don't bet against Yonder Alonso either.
Oh, I think with both of them, especially with Yonder Alonso, is going to be, we quote Denny Green here a lot, but he is going to be what we thought he's going to be. It's hard to believe that he won't be a middle of the order, gets on base, doesn't strike out a whole lot, hits for some power, probably not going to hit for,
That's the real question. How much power will Yonder Alonso
I think he's going to hit for power. I don't think he'll hit 40 homers or anything, but he's going to be more of that guy who hits for average, gets on base, and hits for power. Yes, there are some questions with him about, the Reds just promoted, Joey Votto to the big leagues last year. He had a very good rookie year. That will get worked out, probably when we're talking 2010.
Whether
it's Votto moving. Votto has played outfield before and actually is not awful at it. He's not great at it, not awful at it. Or do they move one of the guys, at that point?
But the interesting thing with the Reds list, I think another reason for the variance in opinions on them, JJ, is you do have two teenage, 16, 17-year-old Latin players in their top 10, and Yorman Rodriguez at 5 and Juan Duran at 9. And obviously they got a lot of money, almost $5 million between the two of them. What was the ranking process like for you in deciding where those guys would rank and balancing those two guys versus, say, Chris Dickerson, who I know is a favorite of yours, is a favorite of mine because he went to Nevada. I think he'll be like the 7th Nevada hitter to get to the big leagues in the last decade.
Already is the 7th.
I mean, and a lot of Nevada overachievers out there, Kevin Kuzmanov, Lyle Overbay, Joe Inglet. This is a strong track record for players out of that program, and I like Chris Dickerson for that reason. How do you rank those guys over a guy in Chris Dickerson who right now is their everyday left fielder? Is he not? At least their platoon left fielder.
Well, it looks like it. I mean, it's
platoon with Johnny Gomes, is that it? Awesome.
Right now, there's still talk that they may go out and get another outfielder right now, and they've added Willie Taveras to.
Perhaps Adam Dunn?
Would make sense. I don't think it'll happen, but it just would make some sense. But
Marty Brenneman will never let that happen.
But it was a very difficult year to rank the Reds from the standpoint of, Yonder Alonso, Todd Frazier, kind of clearly, the 1-2. Pick which one you want to have one, pick which one you want to have two.
And maybe Todd Frazier should be their everyday left fielder.
I've heard rumblings that, that is at least a possibility because he's played the position and he's not that far away. He's not really ready. He's only played high A. But there is, they'll have to this year in some ways decide, at some point they're going to have to decide with Todd Frazier, where do we think do we want him to keep being a utility guy or do we want to let him settle on a position and play it? To me, that position is third base because I know they have a lot of third basemen in the system, but they don't have another third baseman in the system, the farm system. Edwin Encarnacion's at the big league level. But in the farm system, Neftali Soto, Juan Francisco are guys who there's some question about whether they'll be able to stick at third.
Correct.
There doesn't seem to be a question with Frazier.
Juan Francisco, by the way, had a big-time winter ball.
Big, very big winter
18
ball.
18 home runs, 12 in the regular season, 6 more in the postseason. Pretty impressive showing by him.
Yeah, he did. And that's the thing with
he walked more in winter, I think, than he did all during the regular season. Only 19 walks in the regular season. Pretty sure he had 20 walks in winter ball.
But so in trying to decide where to rank Rodriguez and Duran, I could see arguments. You know, at least, you know, I had people inside the organization who were like, you know, I could see him being, you know, really high, 1, 2, you know,
right.
3. And I had a little trouble going that high on a guy who, you know, in Yorman Rodriguez's case, on a 16-year-old who's, you know, yet to have an official pro at-bat. That's pretty tough. I could see putting him all the way down at, you know, if you wanted to, you could put him at like 15. But the tools there are such that it was like, okay, you know, Yorman's tools compare favorably with Drew Stubbs, who's number 3. Well,
sure.
Stubbs is a better prospect because Stubbs hit at AAA. I mean,
yeah, he made some strides this year, really offensively, significant strides.
But
I'd say.
But the profile is very similar. Stubbs is a outstanding defensive center fielder who can run. Who basically the one question is, you know, okay, how well will he hit? Yorman Rodriguez is the exact same guy. The only difference is he's, you know, just turned 16. Now with them being a guy who just turned 16. This is going to be very difficult for a while because I was talking about this with Ben Badler in the office, and we're talking about, so let's say he goes to the GCL this year.
Right.
And you almost can throw out if he does well or does poorly. It doesn't really, you know, mean
what
a whole lot.
He's
a 16-year-old making an adjustment to the, you know, U.S. Say next year he goes to, you know, the Pioneer League, which would be a 17-year-old in the Pioneer League.
So you're going in 2010.
So, yeah. So we'd be talking about going into 2011 – he'll be getting ready to make his full season debut.
Potentially.
And we'll almost be tired of rocking, talking about him.
Almost have some prospect fatigue already for Yorman Rodriguez. That's,
you know,
it's a challenge, no doubt.
And it's something where it's gone, you know, it goes well, it goes poorly. I mean, you know, sometimes we've been too aggressive with some of these guys in the past. At the same time, you know, sometimes we've been aggressive with them. I mean, Felix Hernandez we were aggressive with. And
right.
We were basically trumpeting Felix Hernandez, you know, at a time where not many people knew who Felix Hernandez was.
Yeah, I think it's good to be a little cautious, and I think it also is good to get excited about guys like this, and you just have to try to guard yourself against prospect fatigue. But, the clubs get it too. There's no doubt that clubs get it. See Felix PA. There are many other guys where clubs just wish, you know, kind of expect the guy to be on a certain timetable. When that player is not on their timetable, they lose patience and move on. I mean, like the Indians are the opposite with Adam Miller. Have been excessively patient with a guy with all his injury issues. I mean, I don't think I shouldn't say excessively. They've been exceedingly patient with Adam Miller, and that's how that guy is in their top five for like the fifth year in a row after 3 or 4 years at number one in their system. But the Reds system is really interesting. That Kyle Lotsgar is the only pitcher you list. He's a Canadian right-hander and missed part of the year with a broken elbow, broken bone in his elbow. Who's the next pitcher on the Reds list?
Well, after that, you get into relievers. I mean, there are multiple.
Who's their next starting pitcher?
Their next starting pitcher.
Sam LaCure?
No. Sam LaCure is not. He's.
He's vanilla.
They will go into spring. They have a fifth starter job open, you know, right now at least. And they'll go into spring with Homer Bailey, Darryl Thompson, who is the next.
There you go.
Darryl Thompson, not far off the top 10. But Homer Bailey, Darryl Thompson, Matt Maloney. Ramon Ramirez,
top 20 type of guy.
Ramon Ramirez, another guy who's kind of
changeup piece,
who has an outstanding changeup and had success in a limited exposure last year in the big league level.
Okay,
so you've got those guys plus throw in Micah Owings, who they traded for in the Abdon deal.
Forgot about Micah.
So you have five guys battling for one job, and they probably the losers, the four losers of that job, probably all end up in AAA.
So Louisville could be interesting.
Louisville could have a very deep pitching staff, at least. But I would say Ramirez and Thompson are the next two guys as far as not Homer Bailey, you know, and Micah Owings don't, you know, qualify anymore.
Right.
You know, those are the two guys, the next as far as starting pitchers.
That would be the weakness for me for the for the Reds.
It's the weakness in that the Reds, as far as where to rank them overall, I mean, we had this discussion in the office. It's like, how do you value depth versus impact? And generally, we come down on the side of impact talent is more important than depth. The Reds have a number of guys who didn't make the top 10 who I expect to play in the big leagues next year.
Right.
You know, Ryan Hannigan didn't make the top 10. He's going to be their number 2 catcher.
Searching mentally for his name right now. Yeah.
But he's going to be their number 2 catcher. You know, I mean, he was going to be their number 1 before they traded for Ramon Hernandez.
Right.
You know, Chris Dickerson didn't make the top 10. He'll be in the big leagues this year. You know, and you can keep going. Josh Reneke, you know, is going to be in the big leagues this year at some point, the right-handed reliever.
As long as I don't pair him with Jordan Smith, everything will be fine.
But so
a little inside joke there.
But so it is something where, you know, they have depth, but how much does that depth? But
how much can they bring that to bear? But that's another show.
Yeah, we'll move on to. Okay, so who do you think's next? I mean,
for me, it's Pittsburgh, and but I think we have some disparate opinions on Pittsburgh. I just know talking with Jim Callis about this, for example, and Pedro Alvarez is clearly the number one guy, and there's some off-season issues going on with Pedro. We had the holdout. He showed up overweight to Instructional League. We had those quotes in September where Greg Smith basically said he's going to come into – I'm confident he'll come to spring training in better shape.
And you know what? You could write off when he showed up for Instructional League overweight after essentially missing – you know, sitting out for
3 months.
You go, okay. He shouldn't have eaten as much as he did. He didn't work out as much. But, okay, now he's signed. We'll see what he shows up as.
January mini camp, and he showed up overweight again.
That's much more troubling.
And with tendonitis in his knees from being overweight, which made it harder for him to condition. I'm sorry, that sounds like me, not like a guy who just got $6 million to play. So, to me, the Pirates have to be disappointed. You don't want to read too much into that, I don't think, with Pedro Alvarez and how that affects his long-term future. He got that money because the guy can hit.
And he still can hit.
I think he can still hit. But if he's a first baseman, not a third baseman, I'm less impressed with old Pedro. I'm also, to me, the shine is a little bit off on Andrew McCutchen. That doesn't mean that I don't think Andrew McCutchen will be a solid regular. I just don't think he's going to be a star. Now, can he be a center fielder and an everyday regular? Yeah, I think he can. And I know Nate McLaughlin got a gold glove. I know that because that was the Pittsburgh Pirates Christmas card, was with gold glove or Nate McLaughlin. But I think he also had like a minus 27 in the fielding Bibles, plus minus. So I don't think Nate McLaughlin is going to keep Andrew McCutchen from being the center fielder. I think Nate McLaughlin goes to a corner and becomes a productive outfield corner. He had a nice year offensively last year. That works.
Because you need McCutchen to be a center fielder because that's right. His value somewhat is tied up in that.
He doesn't hit for a corner guy. And you know what? All the comparisons on him out of high school were lasting's millage. He's kind of headed that way, and that's just not as great a comp in 2009 as it was in 2005. Then you got Jose Tabata, who finished strong. I had great reports on him in the Eastern League after the trade. But the bottom line is the guy at age 19 was very young for that league and was really overmatched the whole first half and didn't handle it well. Had a couple of tantrums, basically, when he was a Yankee. Had a suspension for throwing a tantrum. And Brad Lincoln, you know, your 2006 draft, the fourth overall pick, and, boy, he's looking like the worst pick of that draft. It's so far, I understand, you can't write him off, and there's a good track record for guys coming back from Tommy John surgery, but like a 460-some, 470 ERA in A-ball last year.
And he's an A-ball. He's a polished college guy. That's not something where you say, hey, you know, well, he was overmatched.
Right, 23 years old in A-ball. I mean, I know he's coming off Tommy John surgery, so there's some caveats. Brian Morris, Tommy John. Neil Walker, Warlords. No, bad Bill Clinton reference. But, you know, 102-29 strikeout-to-walk ratio. Jeff Sues, big-time arm, but, you know, ridiculous injury history from Jeff Sues. That's the first year in four. He's been healthy. Shelby Ford is an extra guy. Daniel McCutchen is a middle reliever at best on a championship team. Robbie Grossman is solid but not spectacular. That's a pretty weak top 10. It's the Pirates. It's what we've come to get used to. It's a pretty weak organization. I don't think there's any other way to put it. They have a ton of work to do there with the new administration going into their second year. And honestly, I don't think they got off to a great start. I don't think they made great trades. In trading off ex-Nady and Jason Bay, they got okay value, but not great value, JJ. And the Alvarez thing certainly didn't – they probably could have handled that a lot better. They didn't sign their second-rounder in Tanner Shepherd. It's good that you take a chance on him, but the guy who I'm a little bit surprised didn't make their top 10 is Jarrett Cunningham, the GCL infielder who had a really nice GCL debut and was a nice piece of scouting by the Pirates. Now, he's a Pacific Northwest kid who missed all but one or two games of his spring high school season due to a knee injury. But really nice job by the Pirates to scout him, go off the reports from when he was a junior, and get that guy for what they signed him for. And then he had a really nice pro debut for him. He looks like a guy who's athletic who can hit. So I think the Pirates had a chance. They have a chance to have a good 2008 draft, but there's still quite a few ifs in that group.
I mean, well, you know, for the new regime there, the difficulty starts from the fact that you start basically so far underwater.
Absolutely.
That you have to claw just to get basically to the surface. I mean,
it's amazing. Really, Cam Bonifay really left them in much better shape than Dave Littlefield did. I thought Cam Bonifay was one of the worst general managers in baseball when he got fired by the Pirates. Dave Littlefield was, I think, his track record's much worse.
You look at, you know, I mean, they're going to this year, barring something extremely unexpected, they're going to set the record for the most consecutive losing seasons in U.S. professional sports.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. Yeah,
not, I mean, like, you know, not baseball, just.
Oh, I know. That's worse than the L.A. Clippers. I mean, you know, worse than the Bengals. Worse than the pre-1970s Steelers. I mean, really bad.
And so you have that.
Let's do that in just for your
benefit. Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, but you have that. And the reality of it is you look at them right now, and they don't have – I mean, they have to have – Pedro Alvarez has to develop.
Yeah, best case scenarios are not that great.
Because he has to develop into a cornerstone player, because that's the thing that the Pirates have lacked. I mean, really, what, since Barry Bonds left?
Basically. I mean, their cornerstone players – well, the thing is they did have Brian Giles there with 39 homers a year basically every year around the turn of the decade. But mostly they've locked up players who they thought were cornerstone players who weren't, like Jason Kendall or like Jack Wilson or like Freddie Sanchez. The guys they've given a lot of money to have been guys who haven't, as soon as they got the money, haven't been as good as they thought they were.
And even before they got the money, in a lot of cases, like, you know, they weren't that good. I mean,
and to me, the big issue is they haven't developed pitching. We had a nice feature in this issue, kind of a what-if feature that John Parato, our longtime correspondent, did. I thought John laid it out pretty well. There are a lot of turns in the road over those 15 years the Pirates could have done differently. But to me, the biggest one is the 2002 draft, Upton for Bullington. And then the other one is the great one, the trade where they were offered
Ryan Howard
for Kip Wells. Talk about an impact player you could build around. I know Ryan Howard's a little overrated. I know he had a .339 on-base percentage. It is.
But still, if he was a Pirate.
The kind of players that get overrated are the kind that lead the major leagues in home runs and RBIs every year. And that's still, there's quite a bit of value in that, no matter what his on-base percentage is.
The reality of it is, and I think this probably is the perfect summation before we move on to the Cubs and Astros, is the other what-if in there that we would be talking about right now. If the Pirates in 2007 had just said, you know what?
Yeah.
Matt Wieters, we like him.
We're going to pay what it takes to take him.
We're going
to
pay what it takes, and you'd be talking right now about Wieters 1, Alvarez 2.
Absolutely.
If you did that, that's two potential cornerstones to build around. Instead, Daniel Moscos is not on this top 10, and he wasn't close to being on this top 10.
No, and that's no offense to Daniel Moscos, but he could go down in history as like the Sam Bowie of baseball.
But a much worse version of Sam Bowie.
I don't think Matt Wieters is necessarily going to be Michael Jordan, but Sam Bowie had some productive gains in the NBA when he wasn't hurt. Daniel Moscos' chances of making the major leagues are looking pretty slim. And that's the bottom line with Littlefield.
And the problem,
Littlefield and his group did not evaluate talent properly, period. They chose guys like Brian Bullington over B.J. Upton. They chose guys like Daniel Moscos over Matt Wieters. Regularly, they stared elite talent in the face and went the other way. And they can blame it on the economics all they want. The bottom line is they misevaluated talent.
And the reality of it is that when you talk about how much money was difference between Wieters and Moscos,
minimal in the long term.
It's basically just one less year of Jack Wilson, you know, on the.
Yeah, it's inexcusable. So, Baseball America podcast. I'm John. He's JJ. We're wrapping up the National League Central. We're going to take a quick email question at podcast@baseballamerica.com. Actually, Kenny Smith. I don't believe this is Kenny the Jet Smith, because if it were, that'd be terrible, and he'd be a knucklehead. But Kenny asked about the White Sox and his namesake, Kenny Williams, over that they make moves to bolster the club, not the farm system, but to bolster the big league club. But this year, it seems like it was more for the future. What do we think of the additions of Brent Littlebridge and Jeffrey Marquez for their top 10, the top 30s? And I bring that up because Brent Littlebridge, originally a Pirate, and a couple years ago, he was kind of like one of the hot new things, almost like it was like a Pirates version of Dustin Pedroia, the little guy who hit for some power. I don't think he's that player anymore. To me, for the White Sox, Brett Littlebridge's better version of Chris Getz. A different version of Chris Getz, one who strikes out more, should hit for a little more thump. I used to be Mr. Jeffrey Marquez because the scouts I talked to outside the Yankees organization said, yeah, his curveball and changeup are solid average. You put that together with a average fastball with good life and an average slider that he keeps down. He's a four average pitch guy, going to get a lot of ground balls, being an innings eater. He took a big step backwards last year with the curveball and the changeup, and is basically just a sinker slider guy now. Might just be best suited as a middle reliever.
But that's the kind of guy that the White Sox, I will give, the White Sox have done a really good job if you want to say what they've, one of their talents they've had is to take especially pitchers who had good reputations at some point.
Right.
Since that reputation has been destroyed.
Yeah.
They take them. They bring them in. They put an arm around his shoulder.
Yeah.
They work with them, and you know, and Gavin Floyd becomes, hey, you know, maybe this, you know, remember Gavin Floyd? He was pretty good at
one
point.
He was the number four overall pick in 2001. And right now, you know, Joe Mauer went first in that draft, but Mark Pryor 2, DeJuan Brazelton 3, Gavin Floyd 4, Mark Teixeira 5. Right now, Gavin Floyd's the third best out of those guys, and he's probably always going to be the third best of those guys from here on out because the chances of Mark Pryor resuscitating his career are very small, which pains me to say. And DeJuan Brazelton's done. He's done. I think that Don Cooper, the pitching coach, there really is. Seems like he's an expert at teaching guys a cut fastball or adding a pitch or subtracting a pitch from their repertoire. And you saw John Danks make the same leap last year, Gavin Floyd. We've seen it with veterans in the past, like Esteban Loaiza. We've seen it with young guys. He's a pretty good pitching
coach.
See what
they did with Bobby Jenks. Bobby Jenks, they took off the scrappy.
Absolutely, yeah. He was waived, absolutely. So, either of these organizations, Houston or the Cubs, could use a guy like that because these are two of the worst organizations in baseball in terms of their farm systems, JJ, their farm system talent. The Cubs probably would have been pretty low even with Felix Pea if he'd qualified, and obviously now they traded him.
And with Jose Seda.
But this is that's right. Well, Jose Seda would have improved them, but this is a rough list. And you've got two Korean signees on this list, one with Tommy John surgery, and actually two, both with Tommy John surgery. One a pitcher, and one Ed Hak-ju Lee, their shortstop. That's my nickname for him. His name sounds like the
Ed
muscular
Hak-ju,
NFL referee, but Jim just calls him the muscular ref. Jim Callis just refers to shortstop Hak-ju Lee as the muscular ref. But you got a ninth-round pick in Jay Jackson, albeit an exciting one, but a ninth-round pick is a number nine prospect. It might have ranked higher, but you know Jay Jackson was also the number two prospect last year in the Great Lakes League in the summer of 2007. I'll point that out again. So if you're a subscriber and you love the draft, you got to check out our summer college lists because we drill down deep. But you got Kevin Hart, who's a decent middle reliever. You got Jeff Samardzija 2 and Andrew Cashner 3. It's not a great list.
You know, just you know, there's a lot of argument whether they're just relievers or if can they start.
I mean, Starlin Castro is a Arizona League middle infielder. He's number 7. This is just an ugly top 30. The whole top 30 was just ugly. I don't really have a great thing to say about the Cubs. I said their farm system continues to get worse as their major league team gets better. I know they'd like the trade-off, but we better win a playoff series if the trade-off's going to be worth it. And at some point, you got to think it's going to catch up to them, JJ, especially now that they've got a new ownership. You wonder if the new owner will sink as much money into them consistently as the Tribune Company used to.
Which is funny to hear that because that was always
Tribune
the
has no money now.
And that was also the thought for a long time was that the Tribune was actually holding them down because, you know, Wrigley Field essentially is a license to print
machine.
Money.
But the thing is, they have made
– They have? No, they have.
They've put money into that front office.
They did. Of course, you could argue they did as they were trying to sell it, so they needed a winner to
sell.
Great
point. That's a great point.
You know,
point well taken.
But, no, you look at the Cubs, and it's like, okay, you can go the route of, hey, we're just going to, we're a big market team. We're going to go free agent. We're going to plug holes that way. We'll make trades from our farm system. But they're running out of guys in this farm system to trade. I mean, there's, when we're talking about basically in the offseason, Jake Peavy. I mean, from everything it sounds like, it does seem like that the Padres were a little difficult to deal with as far as trading Peavy.
Right.
That being said, one of the first questions that comes up when they say, okay, well, they're working on a Peavy trade, it's like, well, who from the Cubs farm system?
Yeah.
I mean, you obviously start with Vitters, who's their number one prospect.
You have to.
But you go beyond that, and it's like, okay, so you need some other key pieces here, and
yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, and to me, without PA, it's a lot less attractive. But, like, the thing is, the Cubs do have some guys at the top of their farm system who aren't prospect eligible anymore. Cedeno, Ronnie Cedeno jumps to mind. But how much – he's not a centerpiece. He's an extra piece.
Right. You need a second cornerstone to make a trade like that.
And they don't have it.
And that's, you can run into problems. Like, when they, if they're in the race, say in July and they need to add a part or two – unless they have a draft, the draft won't really help them because they can trade those guys, but they're not going to have a whole lot of pieces to deal.
Yeah, I think their most tradable commodity to me right now is Wellington Castillo because he's a young catcher. But the right now is not a great time to trade catchers because a lot of teams have extra catchers. There's a surplus, absolutely. So finally, we'll wrap up the podcast with the Astros. And I guess the best thing we can say about the Astros is they had a nice 2008 draft, better than their 2007 draft. But even there, I think you have to put the caveat in that even Jim made this point to me yesterday. He almost thinks that sometimes you can almost overrate the Astros' 08 draft class because it looks so good in comparison to their 07 draft class. But let's be frank. Their 08 draft class, Jason Castro, we caught him an overdraft on draft day. That was a little strong. I think the key is that was he the 10th best talent in the draft? I don't think the consensus is that he was the 10th best, or I guess actually the 8th best overall pick. I forget where he was picked overall. I think it was actually 10th. But, you know, he went ahead of Justin Smoak, the first baseman who went to the Rangers. I think consensus would be Justin Smoak is a better prospect than Jason Castro. Jason Castro can catch and he can hit, and I like Jason Castro. Calling him an overdraft is a little strong, but maybe he wasn't the most talented player on the board at 10. Then Jordan Lyles, who they took 38th overall, was not a consensus guy. It doesn't mean he's a bad pick. He just wasn't a consensus 38th best player in this draft. I don't think he was anything close to that. I think a stronger consensus was 5th to 10th round guy. And Bobby Heck has said he had a great workout for them. I'm a little leery of the workout guys myself. So I think I would take a body of work over a couple months rather than a workout. But he's 17 when he was drafted. He's a young power-armed right-hander. He could be something. But the rest of their system is it's scuffling, JJ. This, you know, Johnny Ash should not make the handbook, and Johnny Ash made the handbook last year. I think he didn't make it this year, unfortunately, for Johnny Ash.
The best way to put it is, I mean, like, if you compare any draft to their 2007 draft, it'll look good because their 2007 draft will go down as one of the worst drafts that any team has ever had.
Has the potential to have the worst
draft.
Has the potential to have to be the worst draft ever. Colin DeLome almost single-handedly has to carry that draft now. Maybe Kyle Greenwald, who's also not that good. But Colin DeLome is pretty much carrying that draft on his own. He did hit 22 home runs last year between two A-ball levels. He also struck out 128 times.
The only thing that you can say positive for their 2007 draft is that, well, at least they didn't spend any money.
Right, at least
that's
the
reason the draft
money.
Was so bad, though, is they didn't spend any money.
They're getting what they paid for.
But the Astros have – it's hard to get a handle. Like, they really went into last year clearly with the emphasis that, hey, we think we can win this. You know, we can win the Central.
And they did finish strong.
They finished strong, but what did that get them?
I don't know. 86 and 76. Maybe it helped them sell a few tickets in 2009, but – I don't know that it was
because you look at them going into the 2009 season, and you don't say, "Well, the Astros are clearly, you know, a team."
Right.
The rest of that division's getting better. I mean,
at the major league level, I mean, like, are they as good as Milwaukee? I don't know. We don't know what Milwaukee.
Milwaukee will
has.
Take a little step down, but you know,
the Cubs.
The Cubs are, you know.
Yeah, the Reds. I don't know what to make of the Reds because you do still have the Dusty factor, and I'm not a person who believes that Dusty Baker will be the guy who's leads into the promised land. But the Cardinals, I think, should be better. Their rotation's a little more settled. They probably will have better health this year. So I don't think the Astros are making the leap. It wouldn't stun me if they had a nice year this year, but and they don't have some of the pieces who were nice complimentary pieces for them down the stretch last year, like Randy Wolf, or Ty Wigginton, who at least hits. He doesn't defend, but at least he hits. So a lot of questions for the Astros on the major league level, even more questions for them on the minor league level. And to me, they're 30 with a bullet in terms of our organizations. I think they're the worst organization, farm system talent-wise, in baseball. I didn't really give it much of a second thought when I ranked them 30th. So
I mean, it's just the reality of it is that if you're looking – when you look through these top 10s, one of the things that jumps out is how many guys in that top 10, you know, especially when you get the handbook even more, but when you know, because we suggest – I mean, if you love this – buy the prospect handbook. We'll, you know, be shipping them out, you know, this week.
The truck arrived today. And one more thing to throw in, I got to plug this. If you order the handbook directly from Baseball America and baseballamerica.com, you can go order it at baseballamerica.com, or you can call us 800-845-2726. You order the prospect handbook from us. That's top 30 prospects for all 30 organizations. Order from us, and you get a special supplement with an extra 31st prospect for every team. So instead of 900 scouting reports, you get 930. So we made our prospect handbook one louder this year. So that's our marketing slogan for that, actually, and we're sticking to it. But the Astros coming up with a 31st guy was tough, put it that way.
The 31st guy for the Astros is, if you're ranking the 930 scouting reports, he's probably going to be number 930.
Put it this way, we came close. The number 31 guy for one, we were debating yesterday where the number 31 guy in one organization would fit in the Astros' top 10, and the consensus was that he would fit into their top 10. So, that's a good way to summarize how not good the Astros farm system is. JJ, lastly, long podcast today, but Super Bowl pick. I know where your loyalties lie. JJ's a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. I'm a fan of only one National Football League team, and that would be the Yanni Jihui's, my fantasy football team. But, JJ, you're not only a Steeler fan, you don't own the company, but you are an expert. I think I'm safe in saying that on the Steelers and on football. What's your take for this weekend's game?
The thing that I'm insane when it comes to this, I love baseball, I love football. Those are my two sports. I mean, basketball and all, I kind of keep an eye on. But
those two things, the Lord and your family are your passions. I used to say Mexican food.
I'm having Mexican food on Sunday for the Super Bowl. I'm right, walling off, you know, cutting off the outside world and eating guacamole and fajitas. But I've gone back and watched multiple Cardinals games this week, you know, to kind of prepare for the game. And the thing that jumps out is that if anyone says that they know what's going to happen with the Cardinals in this game, I just don't believe it, because this Cardinals team in the playoffs has been so much better than the Cardinals team in the regular season was. And so it's just really hard to know. I mean,
which team will show up?
Right. I don't think that it'll be a blowout with the Cardinals winning by a blowout. I just don't think the Steelers' defense has not been blown out by anyone all year.
Right. Have they allowed more than 300 yards yet in the game?
Twice. Darren Sproles had a 65-yard catch late in the game against in the playoff game that put him over 300 in that game.
Okay.
And then the Titans had a little over 300 in week 15, or the 15th game of the season. Two times the Steelers allowed 300 yards in a game. So I don't think – I mean, the Steelers' defense – basically goes into this game. If they win it, if they shut down the Cardinals, it should be a game that, you know, kind of, okay, this defense is one of the great defenses, you know, of the modern era.
But at the very least, put them in the discussion with your 85 right. Bears or 2000 Ravens.
I'd say the 2000 Ravens, the 85 Bears are better than this year's defense.
Okay.
But, you know, they would at least be in that discussion. They're first in the league in most categories this year.
And amazing consistency.
And the thing about it is that they get a legit challenge in the Super Bowl. Like, you know, okay, if you got a good defense, you'd want them to be challenged. Well,
Hall of Fame quarterback
Larry Fitzgerald is the.
You didn't even bat an eye at Kurt Warner Hall of Fame quarterback.
It's very debatable. But you know, I mean, there's a lot of people are gonna. Super Bowls is what it's about in the NFL when it comes to Hall of Fame.
And the NFL Hall of Fame. I'm sorry, those doors are wide open. That door's gonna swing wide.
But you know, so the shorthand version is I think it's got a chance to be a really good game. I think that, you know, won't bore our baseball fans with too much of this, but I do think that, you know, I think the Steelers edge the Cardinals, but I think that the Cardinals defense is good enough to hold down what's not a great, you know, Steelers offense, and I think the Steelers defense is very, you know, definitely good enough to hold down what's a really good Cardinals offense.
I think it's a classic battle of offense versus defense, and it should be fun to watch the cat and mouse.
It should be fun, and there's a Troy Polamalu ad. They're going to do the homage to the Mean Joe Green ad from the 70s.
Oh,
it's
awesome.
It's really pretty cool.
Also, you might check Jim Callis, I believe, contributed to a Mark Topkins feature in the St. Pete Times, where BA correspondent Mark Topkin wrote about the baseball ties of players on these two teams. I believe there are four players on these two NFL teams who were drafted, and Mwelde Moore is the one who had the most significant baseball career, playing several years in the Padres farm system before he decided to go play college football at Tulane. But that's pretty much all I got. I don't remember the other three guys. Dennis Dixon, your third-string quarterback for the Steelers.
Just as significant baseball-wise. I mean, he's like
fifth-round pick. He's still playing, isn't he?
Yeah.
For the Braves system. He's a Braves minor leaguer, active minor leaguer in the Super Bowl this weekend, so that's another excuse for us to talk about it. But, again, I would encourage you to Google J.J. Cooper plus Steelers if you like football and if you really want to get almost a Baseball America-style drill down on football. That's what J.J. gives you.
I am insane,
online.
I will admit.
So for J.J. Cooper, who will be in much better spirits next week if the Steelers win than if they lose, I'm John Manuel. We'll talk to you next week on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.